Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:41 p.m., and that is Central Time. Today is May 10th. So 10-year yields came off by about 5 basis points today. Now, they were a bit down a bit more than that earlier on in trading, and that followed through on the pullback that we saw yesterday. So stock markets were steadier today, and that was a direct response to the moderation in the yield. This really helps to highlight this chicken and egg response that we have in markets. So bond yields are rising because investors are very leery of holding bonds when we are in a period of quantitative tightening, and when we're also seeing interest rate hikes. And this is quite normal. It's normal to see a big surge in yields at the beginning of a quantitative tightening cycle. And this is exactly what we saw on the last two times it's been tried, both in Europe and in the USA. Because initially, bond investors worry about the lack of a backstop and the lack of the biggest buyer in the market. So yields go up. But then, of course, you have the second order effect because yields go up, and because investors then become worried about the lack of availability of credit and liquidity because of quantitative tightening and the runoff of the balance sheets, then that starts to create deflationary forces. And with deflationary forces, people start to buy bonds again. So we're now at a point where a large part of the equity market is interest rate sensitive. So it's responding negatively to rising interest rates. And there's this lockstep approach. So it's normal then for interest rate sensitive instruments to rebound when yields come down, and that's exactly what we've seen. We saw the Nasdaq today starting to steady. But the big problem here is that the 10-year yield has not broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. In fact, it's just pausing here around the 3% level. It's going to have to do more than that on the downside, at least break the sequence of higher reaction lows and break what's been a very consistent move up since the lows in early March to really confirm that demand is returning to dominance. So then if we just, it's really almost like looking at the same chart the other way around. The Nasdaq has pulled back violently and it's short term oversold, and it steadied a little in here today, but most of that advance was because of the rebound, owing to the initial period of steadiness in bond prices by the close yesterday. So now that yields are starting to rally off their low, then we haven't seen follow through on the upside for the Nasdaq. So there's a lockstep issue here. Now, the reason I call it a chicken and egg scenario is you can simply frame it like that. Do bond yields have to come down before equities rally, or do equities have to rally before bond yields can come down? Because it's going to take one to move before the other. More likely than not, it's going to be the bond market has to steady before equities can steady. But this is going to be very much in tune with what happens with the dollar. And the dollar was in positive territory in here today. Now, not in an especially dynamic manner, and it hasn't broken out yet, but it's a new closing high. And this is still a very consistent trend on the upside. It remains likely that the USA is going to be more aggressive in raising rates than just about any other major market. And we're starting to see commodity-related currencies breaking lower. So the Australian dollar broke through the 70-cent level in here today. This is a new reaction low. So it's going to have to rebound and do so in a dynamic manner tomorrow to really, I think, change the outlook for a further escalation of selling pressure. And the New Zealand dollar is also breaking on the downside and following through on the downside in here this week. So certainly commodity related currencies are beginning to come under pressure. And of course, we had the big downward dynamic on the oil price yesterday. And despite some initial steadiness in here today, it was following through on the downside, down another $3.50. So we still have this sequence of lower rally highs, and we certainly tested those 2 days ago. And now it's coming back down to test the sequence of higher reaction lows and the psychological $100 level. So if it's going to bounce, it will do so tomorrow. And if it fails, the chances are that it's going to drop through the $100 level tomorrow. So one of the reasons why bond yields have been rising is because of inflation. And if we had to make a case for why bonds should start to become attractive again, it would be because of slower economic growth. So I've seen more than one commentator, and I really think this is all down to President Biden talking about President Putin being in a corner, but talking about the potential that Russia would use a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine. Now, obviously, that would be a very significant escalation, but it would also contribute to significantly lower growth because everybody would be scared to death. But even without that kind of extreme eventuality, the war in Ukraine is contributing to less economic activity in Europe. So the UK is being almost pushed into recession by the Bank of England. The Bank of England has very clearly stated that they want less demand in the economy. That's really the only tool they have available to them to try and combat inflation. So they're willing to make that sacrifice and to push the UK into recession. Now, it's also worth reminding ourselves that Germany also had a negative quarter of growth at the end of last year. And the DAX index is now right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So if this is a higher reaction low, well, then this would be an ideal place for support to be found. But we need an upper dynamic to confirm that. And the FTSE 250 is breaking on the downside and coming right back down towards the region of the lows from back in March. So it's going to have to bounce and do so in an emphatic fashion to clearly demonstrate that it's back in a demand-dominated environment. Now, the pound has been trending downwards and it remains weak. And a weaker currency is certainly in the UK's interests if they can get control over demand. Of course, it is putting upward pressure on commodity prices, and that's exacerbating some of the inflationary pressures. But it's also bolstering the outlook for the export sector. So, this is certainly a response to the slower economic growth in the region. And of course, the euro isn't exactly a tower of strength either, and it's right in the region of its lows from 2015 through 2017. Now, the one unifying characteristic we have across a lot of these charts is short-term oversold conditions. So it is reasonable to anticipate that when one eventually changes, they pretty much will all change at the same time. That when the dollar starts rolling over, bond yields will also start to come down, and all these currencies will start to switch around as well. One of the big questions is what's going on in China. The Hang Seng index is still quite weak, and it's just about steady in the region of the low from back in March. What I find interesting is that a number of the US listed Chinese shares have been both the biggest winners and biggest losers on successive days. So they're obviously being used as a high beta play on Wall Street. But the Hang Seng broke below the low at the end of March in here today. So if it's putting in a higher reaction low, then it's certainly for the bulls to prove. And then The CSI 300 is also struggling to find support as well. Now, it was in positive territory in here today, and it was a reasonably dynamic move. But it's got to do more than that. It's got to at least push back above the 4,000 level to confirm a break in the trend. Because the characteristic that's been common to the pronouncements in China has been they've been talking a lot of talk, but they haven't been doing much in terms of liquidity. Now, one of the other big points of contention or the big questions out there is whether there is any evidence of disagreement within the Politburo. Because last week they said that they would brook no protest to the COVID zero policies. And then you had Li Keqiang coming out at the end of last week and saying that the unemployment sector is looking kind of dire. So, how are you going to have economic activity when some towns are putting up roadblocks, others are taking them down? And they all want to try and get economic activity going again, but they're terrified of falling victim to being accused of not doing enough to contain the coronavirus. So these are meaningful challenges for China. And then, of course, we have the fact that the property sector is still struggling to pay back bonds. And at least it is steadying. But this, of course, is the state-owned portion of the market. It doesn't give us an accurate depiction of the broader portion of the market because large numbers of the private companies are just not in the stock market indices. Now, the renminbi has been devaluing rather aggressively over the last week, and it was in weaker territory again in here today. So, this is a rapid depreciation in the currency, and it clearly states that China is willing to do something to support the economy. But how willing are they going to be to really pump? And they don't want to create an asset bubble, or they don't want to further inflate the asset bubbles that they have. So we're still in a liquidity constrained environment globally. So it's having a knock-on effect everywhere. And we can think about the about face that the RBI had in India last week. And the Nifty index pulled back to test the region of the lows. The one thing that India has in its favor is that it's comparatively isolated or insulated from the rest of the world. But they still have a domestic inflation issue. And they're going to have to tighten up some policy to try and combat it. It suggests that India isn't going to be permanently immune if we continue to see selling pressure on Wall Street. We're definitely seeing at least some evidence of contagion selling coming through in gold. So gold prices were in negative territory again in here today, and back testing the $1,850 area, which is the region of the 200-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying range. It really does need to bounce and do so emphatically soon if the benefit of the doubt is to be given to the upside. And if it follows through on the downside, and most particularly breaks the $1,800 area, well, that's going to open up the scope for a reversion back towards the 1,000-day moving average, which is around the 1675 level. Now, if we go back and look at the trend up from 2001 to 2011, there was really only one occasion that it tested the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and that was in 2008 when the trend began. It was breaking above the 1,000-day moving average in 2002, and it never looked back. So, for it to come all the way back to the 1,000-day moving average now, that would be a major test of the overall trend. But ideally, it will bounce soon because there is still the potential for, I think it's quite likely that if inflationary pressures moderate, then any chance of rising interest rates will disappear. And if that's the case, then we're going to be in a negative real interest rate environment where the value of currencies will be devalued to try and tackle the massive quantities of debt that have been accumulated. So even in a rising interest rate environment, which is aimed to try and control inflation, then we can sort of look out the other side of it. Now, of course, the big challenge is that investors have been conditioned to buy the dip. And central banks want to try and curtail liquidity. And they want to curtail risk-taking behavior that's contributing to inflation. So they might not be as reliable liquidity providers as they have been in the past. That, I think, is perhaps the biggest challenge that might be outstanding to the belief that they're going to ride to the rescue in a really aggressive manner. But if energy prices start to come back down, that will start to moderate some of the inflationary pressures. We've been also, I mean, I think it's been really easy to predict inflation for years. Now we have inflation. There's a lot of people jumping to the conclusion that it's going to be there indefinitely, and that we're going to have almost double-digit inflation lasting for a prolonged period. But the problem is with that is we don't have evidence for that those kinds of conditions lasting indefinitely, because you will have a response and people will consume less, or they'll find alternatives, and or there'll be regulations to curtail price appreciation. Then you get lulls in prices, and that then encourages demand. Then you get surges in prices. So it's very likely that we're now in a shorter cycle period, and that we could quite easily have recessions at any point within the next 18 months. The peak, the much lower peak in the yield curve spread, is very much supportive of the idea that we're going to have shorter cycles. That instead of having a bull trend and an economic expansion that lasts a decade, that we might be looking more at 3 to 4 year advances in the economy, and then subsequently an 18-month period of negative asset price returns, and then big bull markets for the next few years afterwards. And that might last for a decade, and it would be very much in tune with the kind of response to inflationary pressures that took place in the 1970s. And of course, the sheer volume of debt outstanding is going to represent a headwind to growth eventually. So that's one of the other major components in a bullish case for bonds. But we're not really going to see those kinds of arguments come to fruition until central banks relent from raising interest rates. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.